Hello there. It's Yukiko Amaya of My Goddess Path. And thank you so much for joining me today for this really fascinating talk about story, find your life purpose through story. And some of you might be wondering, what does that mean? And so we'll find out together. So stay in, tuned in, make yourself a little cup of tea, and tell your friends, let them know that we are coming on. So this live series is something that I started last year, and it's part of now a podcast. So after the live stream, this will go up as a podcast in Goddess and Energy Coming Alive podcast that you can access anywhere you get your podcast. That's Goddess and Energy Coming Alive. And there are many talks there, conversations that I've had with fascinating, amazing women, all living their path of soul and heart, which is something that's so fascinating and interesting and wonderful to me. So I am a priestess of Avalon, priestess of Goddess, but I originally come from Japan, and I grew up partially in Japan and then in Australia, the United States, France. So I'm kind of a nomad. But some of the earliest stories that have come into my consciousness are stories that have been handed down for generations in Japan. Stories of the moon princess, stories of the Momotaro, the boy that they find inside a floating peach, and these are stories. I'm sure that you have many stories that you also grew up with, which have become a part of your understanding, perhaps in a conscious or even a subconscious way of the world around us and how we fit into it. Stories are amazing. And so I am really excited and delighted to introduce to you a very dear friend of mine and also an amazing, fantastic woman, traveler, really seeking in the four corners of the world what this life of ours might mean. And she does it in her own way, of course. So Christina is a priestess of Avalon, a member of the Order of Bards, Ovids, and Druids. And she is consecrated to Goddess as Bard Priestess, and she has been designated to hold the fire of ancient wisdom. So I'm just going to bring her on as I keep on talking. Hi, Christina. So she is currently dedicating her work to pre-Hispanic Latin American mysteries. She has been ordained as a cacao tera, a sacred celebrant of the cacao ceremony, after 2 years of intensive training and, of course, a lifetime of study. As part of her Latin American journey and apprenticeship, she is studying together with the Keros community in the Peruvian Andes to become a Nusta. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation, a priestess of Pachamama, earth goddess in the Andean belief. She's also a sociologist and semiotician, and her purpose is to guide children and people into the beauty of discovering their soul purpose through the skills of nature lore, sacred ritual, myths, and proverbial wisdom. Sounds interesting, right? You better stick around. She believes in the transformative power of mythology and storytelling. Her cacao and herb lore ceremonies are also children-friendly. And they are not just entertainment, but a deep initiation into the sacred mysteries of Mother Earth. And goodness knows we can all use that at this amazing time in our world history and story. So welcome, Christina. Thank you so much for joining us. And first of all, actually, if you are watching, I would love to invite you to tell us which part of the world you are tuning in from, and if you know of what native lands you're upon. Like, I am tuning in from what's called present-day Northern Virginia, Shenandoah River Valley, the ancient lands of the Manahawk people of the Monacan Confederacy. And Christina, where are you right now?
Hi, Yukiko. Wonderful to be here with you. I'm tuning in from Belgium, from the ancient lands of the Franks. But of course, you know how Europe has been such a theater of a lot of operations. So it's very hard to say what were the original. So let's just say from the ancient lands of the Franks.
Oh, nice, nice. And we have Irina Lattice. So happy to be here. So happy, Irina, that you are here. And, you know, tell us where you are tuning in from. And as much as is possible, we would like to make this interactive in the sense of we really invite you to make comments, ask questions as much as you like. Irina is tuning in from Romania, native lands of, is it Dacia, before Roman occupation. And Michelle Bouchard-Clark, hey Michelle, in Western Pennsylvania from the Monongahela tribe of the Iroquois Nation. Wonderful, welcome, welcome, welcome. So first of all, if you're like me, you know, when Christina said, because I know her as a sister priestess of Avalon, we trained together, it was wonderful. But when she said, I am a member of the Order of Bards, Ovids, and Druids, I was like, wow. And that she's consecrated to goddess as a bard priestess. So I wanted to know more about that, Christina. I mean, what is a bard priestess and what is this order?
It sounds like something very mystical, right?
Yeah.
When we think of the Order of the Druids, we think of characters like Gandalf the Grey, maybe. So these kind of icons come to our head. And it is true that in the Celtic culture, they say that the Druids walked these lands thousands and thousands of years ago. But then again, we also know what's been happening in Europe and across the world in the past thousands of years. So it's very hard to say that it's an ancient order. It's an order that has been reinvented, like a lot of the modern temples, a lot of the new streams of spirituality that actually take their resource from ancient lore and mythology. The Order of Bards, Ovids, and Druids is based in the British Isles. And the name says it all. The Bards, the Ovids, and the Druids are the three stages in the development of a druid, of a spiritual priest and healer and storyteller. The bard was the storyteller. The bard was, in ancient times, the one who would train for decades and decades to open their ears to hear the holy voices, the voices of the gods, or however they would call them, because we know that even the concept of God is quite new in the history of humanity. And then the Ovids would be the healers, the magicians, the ones who would use herb lore and, you know, the power of Mother Earth to heal. And then the Druids would become even political figures, because they were the spiritual leaders of a whole community. They would be counselors. So all of them together would build this whole process of learning, of training, of preparing your soul and your body to bring wisdom and spirituality into the community.
Oh, I love that.
What is wonderful is that in the British Isles, there are actually two orders of Druids. We have the Order of Bards, Ovids and Druids, which I'm a part of. And then there's another one in Wales, which is also recovering that ancient lore of Wales. And I know that you're fascinated by that culture. So maybe you will want to get in touch with the high Druid of the Order of Druids in Wales, who is Christopher Hughes, quite a fascinating personality. So very, very interesting to have them in your life and to recuperate that wisdom and that love for nature and for stories and for myths.
Wow, I'm just getting goosebumps because you're the second or the third person who's spoken to me about him. So I think usually when it comes in two or threes, I go, okay, the universe is telling me, the goddess is telling me to connect. And one of the stories of Wales and the Druids, I think, is that of when they take the stand and when the Romans come into Anglesey. And it is said that it was the female Druids who were the fierce, fierce fighters. The Romans were quite afraid of the Druids, but when they take the last stand, when the Romans come in to burn down the sacred groves, which were their temples, that they fought fiercely. And the female Druids, and mm-hmm. they sang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sang and they screamed and they threw imprecations, you know, so they used their voice. There's power in the voice. And of course, this whole story is actually quite heartbreaking. The fall of the Isle of Mona, the fall of Anglesey. But it shows the power of the voice and the story and the myth and the connection with spirituality, especially in that community, to cast away all evil, or this was the belief, right?
No, absolutely. And it also, and I want to go back to your story telling origins, but it also reminds me of Taliesin and it was one of the bards that comes in with the Milesians when they conquer Ireland. And the Tuatha Dé Danann are the ones who, the people of the goddess Danu, are the ones who are ruling Ireland. And the Milesians come in and they make a deal. They say to the Milesians, you go back out past the ninth wave and then try again. And we will fight, you know, magic invocation, power against power, to see which side the goddesses of this land will take. And if you guys win and can come to land in Ireland, then you can take half of the, we'll split 50-50. And it was a bard and he was a druid. And he was just like, as you say, a healer, a politician. He knew all the histories and he is able to beat the Tuatha Dé Danann because he sings this song to the goddess of Ireland, saying, the most beautiful, we will praise you, we will lift you, we will do everything for your beauty. And she goes, I like these new people. But and then, you know, that's the beginning of the story of the people of the Shi, because the Tuatha Dé Danann then take the division of the world of Ireland is above ground and underworld. And so they become the people of the underworld. And the Milesians take the upper world. And these are the first people of the Shi, or the fairy folk, you know? But anyway,
they treat them. But it's funny you say Taliesin. You see how one story goes into another. It's impossible to start one story and then not to go into another story, another myth, because you say Taliesin and it's the original story of the Order of the Druids. So you know the myth of Goddess Ceridwen, who is brewing this potion of wisdom and of oracular power. And then the night she needs to finish this potion that was brewing for 1 year and one day, the servant who was supposed to just watch the brewing process gets that wisdom. And then there's a whole story of transformation, and he becomes Taliesin, the first Merlin of the British Isles.
And that's right.
Yeah, the ancestor of everything that is the power of the bard to throw, to take the power from myth and oracular wisdom and poetic wisdom and guide the people.
Yeah. And you know what I find fascinating with that story is because he is digested by Caradhwen, by the goddess, by the great goddess of transformation. So he's taken inside because she eats him, right? He in the transformation, he finally tries to escape her, and then he becomes a grain and tries to hide in a mountain of grain, and she becomes a hen, and she finds him and she eats him.
And then she gives birth to them, to him, right? So it's the second the second birth, the real birth.
And it's, yes. But what that makes me think about is the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, and how she eats, to become her initiate is to be eaten. And we all know this when we're going through the depth of despair, and we feel like we don't know where we are, who we are, and we feel like we're just in this the dark night of the soul, like we're in the underworld. And it's only recently, after really thinking about Caradhwen and then finally finding the myth of Sekhmet, that I went, oh, the dark night of the soul is when we've been eaten, and we are now in the digestive system of the transformational goddess. And that if we can walk through without trying to distract ourselves and try to get the hell out through illusion, that there is a deep transformation that happens, something like that. But I don't know, it just came to me. Sorry.
I love that. And we started with stories here and there, and there is so much to say about how we have these myths that resonate so deeply, like the goddess, the big devouring goddess that eats you up. Yeah. And when you feel like you reach rock bottom, you're actually in the cave of the goddess, of the dark face of the goddess. And then you know that you will be born again. And all mythologies of the world have this archetype.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking to my spiritual grandmother in Mexico, and she was talking to me about Mictlantecuhtli, who is the great leader, the woman leader of the underworld. And she would tell me about this figure of the goddess. And I would say, oh, we have her too in our Celtic tradition. We call her Caradhwen. And then it feels like we in different cultures of the world, we have generated the same myths, the same archetypes, because they resonate so deeply with who we are. And because we need them to learn the stories of our lives.
That's so true. And you know, this is a great way to go into, part of what you were speaking about, how finding the story or finding oneself within these stories, or finding a way to read a story that suddenly opens an understanding of its connection with you, the resonance can lead to deep healing and finding this life purpose. And I wonder if you can speak about that and speak about a little bit about your experience with story as this healing pathfinder, in a way, for a lost soul.
It's very bizarre because I've been learning myth and story since forever. So it's been probably 30 years since I started on this journey of learning mythology and of reading and devouring it like there's no tomorrow. But I never really understood why. You know how your journey just goes, your path just unfolds, and then at some point you understand in hindsight why you've been there, why you've taken the choices you've taken. And it all made sense when I was in Mexico and I was in this kind of feminine circle retreat. We know we need these so much in the world today. So I'm so happy to see that so many communities of women around the world on different continents are building this kind of circles of healing, of storytelling, of dancing and laughing together. So I was in this circle of women with a wonderful lady leading it. And at some point we were eating our lunch. So you would say in a not very sacred moment. Of course, every moment can be a sacred moment if you look at your life as a ritual, right? But we were in a, let's say, informal moment. And she was telling a story about her childhood and about a girl she was having a conflict with. So again, a story that would seem very non-sacred.
And at some
mundane, that's the word. Yeah, you would say profane, but it has bad connotations, right? The sacred and the profane, mundane. And I would listen to her and I said, I think I have a story for you. And I told her a myth from one of the...
What was the story that you told her?
It's a story that pops up into my head very often. It's a story that comes from the Yoruba civilization, which is the West African culture of nowadays Nigeria and Benin. And what happened to the Yoruba culture is that it expanded to Latin America, to South America and Central America, non-intentionally. So during the big colonization and the slavery, a lot of people, as we know from West Africa, have been sold as slaves. And then what they did is that they carried their culture and their gods with them. So this is how we have nowadays in Brazil Candomblé and in Cuba Santeria, which all have this Yoruba roots. And the story is the story of Oshun, who is the goddess of love, the goddess of beauty, well, the goddess of vanity also, because as we know, this archetype is quite common. We always have a bit of a vanity, but also the care for the feminine and for what beauty means. So this story pops up into my head quite often for different reasons in different contexts. And I told her, I have a story for you. And I shared the story while everybody was eating. So we were having lunch and I was telling the story. And she said, we need to do this intentionally. Because the story that you just told me, all of a sudden, threw light into a drama and a life journey that didn't make any sense in my head. So I carried this trauma with me since so long. I'm trying to cover it, putting a bit of humor into it, presenting it like a mundane thing, but it's actually a deep soul trauma. And the story that you just told made me understand that there's purpose, there's a mission, there's a truth, there's truth behind that. And this was the moment in my life when I realized that this is the power of stories, actually. Myths are not just tales. They come together with ancient initiation mysteries, with objects of power, with chants, with archetypes. Is the way humanity has protected the core of its sacredness. And when we hear a story, it can shed light into our own life journey. And we understand why we did what we did. So stories can reveal a problem and a solution. This is the power of stories, actually. It's not just entertainment. The bards were not just entertainers. Of course they were. And humor and verse always helps. But actually, the myths they were telling was a way to heal either an individual or a collective trauma. So that was the moment when I realized that this could be my path. And it was so... Well, nothing happens by accident, of course. We were in our training of priestesses, and I was in the training of in the Order of Druids. And it was my moment to decide what would be my path. This all happened in the same time, almost like how you say, three people already told me about Christopher Hughes. I need to check this gentleman out and see what he can bring into my life, right? When you hear different things happening in the same time, it all makes sense. So this was when I realized that this is my path to dive deep into all these myths, mythologies, and stories and use them in a healing way, because we need that healing so much. We need to recuperate, to recover that ancient wisdom. It's so much needed.
No, that's really powerful. And I love what you said of protecting the sacred core, you know? And I'm getting, Simina says, Christina, will you share with us the story of the Yoruba goddess of Oshun? And I feel that since it's a story that comes to you so often, would you be willing to share
to tell the story? Actually, yes. What's better in a live stream about storytelling than actually do some storytelling?
Yes, I think that would be really wonderful.
Yes, I would definitely love that. So the story of the Yoruba goddess Oshun. You see, all the gods and goddesses in the Yoruba tradition are not even called gods and goddesses. They're called the orishas. They're a sort of divine beings who live among us. So they're not separate. They don't live in a sort of heaven that is untouchable. They live among us. And the Yoruba people say that each of us have our head orisha. This means that we have one of these orishas, one of these godlike beings or divine beings who give us their own character and their protection, and they guide us throughout our lives. Actually, behind the scenes, it's told that behind the whole Jungian archetypes theory, there has been a journey to understand the Yoruba culture, and this is the head of Orisha is what Jung learned and led him to develop this theory of the archetypes. So let's say that the Oshun goddess is the archetype of love and beauty, yeah? And because she doesn't live in a heaven, in the heaven far away that we imagine gods live in today, but she lives among us, she has her daughters. The daughters of Oshun are the women who are like her. The women who are like, you recognize a daughter of Oshun because she would be beautiful and she would be sweet and she would love dancing. And her movements are like the movements of the water, because Oshun is a sweet water goddess. She's the goddess of springs and rivers. So this is how you would recognize a daughter of Oshun. She would be maybe a bit vain, which of course, we have to take people with the good and the bad, yeah? She might be a bit fickle. She might move between sensual and sexual experiences and navigate from one to another. And this is how we recognize a daughter of Oshun. What happens with the daughters of Oshun is that they also carry a lot of guilt. Because of course, throughout different ages of humanity, there have been many ways to keep women under control, let's say. And one of those ways has been guilt. And how this guilt starts is with this myth that the first daughter of Oshun got her period, her moon time, her first moon time, yeah? What we call the menarche, the first moon blood. And she would be so traumatized and so ashamed, and the whole community would make fun of her. And she wouldn't understand what this means. There was so much shame and guilt. So what she did, of course, was to go to Oshun and to ask for protection. And Oshun said, "My daughter, this will be the most glorious moment of your life." And she prepared a bath for her daughter with sacred herbs and with sacred oils and flowers. And she bathed her daughter, and then she cuddled her in a beautiful, warm blanket and put her in meditation under a sacred tree and said, "Now is the moment you become a woman. And a woman connects with our Mother Earth. So now you will receive the mysteries and the secrets of Mother Earth. And there was the daughter of Oshun receiving her wisdom of womanhood. And in the meantime, what Oshun did was to take all that bath water with the moon blood, the first moon blood of her daughter, and by magic, because of course the Orishas are very magical beings, by magic Oshun turned that water into the feathers of a sacred bird in the Yoruba tradition, which is called Edide. The Edide is kind of like a parrot, but of course it sounds a bit derogatory when we call it like this. It doesn't sound so sacred, but it's a parrot that is so rare that its red blood feathers are looked after by hunters for years. So hunters can dedicate their lives to get at least one feather of that Edide bird. And Oshun would, in that day, decide that all the priestesses of the Orishas, we now call them Yal Orisha, which means the woman who serves the Orisha, the priestesses of the Orisha, when they will be initiated, they will receive their headdress with fabulous Edide feathers as a reminder of the sacred moon blood and the connection that we bond with Mother Earth when we have our first moon blood. And this way, the Orishas will recognize them and will come and ride them, because there's a whole tradition of how the gods ride their ride humans in the sacred dances. And this is the ritual of honoring the Orishas. So when you put on the headdress as a priestess of the Orishas will recognize you and will come and embody you. And this was the way Oshun taught her daughter that the guilt and the shame doesn't come from our sacred connection with the divine beings. It comes from a very inferior definition of what life is and of who we are as human beings. So this is the story of Oshun.
Wow. Thank you. I'm sure many of us can resonate with that sense of guilt and shame around the moon blood. Mm. I think in the English language, some people, it was even called the curse, you know? And Simina says, what an amazing story. Thank you. Yes, Simina, thank you so much for asking. See, we've got to ask for Christina to deliver. it's such an empowering story, I feel, for many of us to be able to hear, because even though we know intellectually that it's not supposed to be a shameful thing, but culturally and energetically, it's being put down so much that I feel like it's part of the part of this vision that we need to overcome, and not just to overcome, but to really embrace and connect with. And I feel like whether, you know, it's men or women, that we all have these areas that we hold in guilt and shame from a misunderstanding or from social conditioning that was meant to advance a certain group of people within the society, but it had nothing really to do with promoting more life-giving energy or to create and weave together these life-enhancing connections. We were talking about this before we came on about how stories are so important as part of also the way that we can knit our relationship connections with the natural world as much as with each other. But yes, so Irina also says, thank you, yes. Helena, oh, yes, she's sending a thank you for the story. Is there a story, Christine, that you came upon yourself that really kind of like was a light bulb moment for you, or something that really, a story that you connected very deeply with, that may have opened your way into wanting to know more about stories, or something that touched you so profoundly that it shifted something in you?
This question. There are so many stories that influence us in different parts of our, different moments of our lives. I honestly believe now that we all have a sort of head story. So a bit like the Yorubas think, we have a head Orisha who takes care of us in our journey. I think we all have a story that is the story of our souls. And if we seek for it long enough or far enough, or if we listen, or if we read, or if we're curious, we will discover it at some point, and it makes everything more meaningful. So it helps everything fall into place, let's say. But of course, in different moments of our lives, we have different stories. So there are so many myths from different civilizations around the world that at some point have made me feel, all right, this is why this is happening. Now I understand why I'm here. Now I understand why I met this person. And I can say that there is one myth that had stayed with me throughout my life. So probably this would be my head story. Probably.
Oh, wow. Would you mind telling us?
Yeah, I'm sure you will not be surprised. So it's not something out of the, you know, and it's not extraordinary. It's a bit expected even. It's the story of Scheherazade, you know, Shahrazad, they call her in Persian. And of course it makes sense, because you talk to a storyteller about the healing power of stories and finding your purpose through story. And then you cannot talk about the Arabian Nights. You cannot not talk about the Arabian Nights, which is actually not really called the Arabian Nights. It's originally Persian Nights, but let's not get too nerdy about it. 1001 Nights, they would call it in the Middle Eastern culture. And I discovered this when I was a very little girl. So this is why I'm saying that it's been almost 30 years since I'm just fascinated with mythology and stories, because I discovered this 1001 Nights book on my parents' bookshelf when I was a little girl. I have to say I'm quite surprised by my parents having this book, because it was a very free language, in terms of language, a book. I don't know if you know it very well, but it has a lot of sexual, you know, references. And for my parents, I have to say, they either didn't read it or they are far more open-minded than I appreciate them to be. A lot of references of, you know, women showing their sexual prowess, you know, the competition between the six women, the white and the black and the yellow, the blonde and the redhead, and the and a lot of homosexual references too. So very free-minded collection of tales, which you wouldn't say my parents would have appreciated, but that was my beginning into the storytelling world. And I read this book, and then I understood there's something healing about tales, about telling tales. Because, you know, we're so familiar with the Disney's version of Aladdin, but what we don't know, or not all of us know, is that all these stories in the 1001 Nights are actually what we call a frame story. So there's one story that hosts all of them. There's this woman who for 1001 nights tells stories without stopping. And this means almost 3 years. So for 3 years, she even gives birth to two babies, and she stays there in the same bed telling stories to feed into the imagination of her husband. And the story starts with Shahriyar, who is this Persian leader who is so wounded by women that every night, every day, he takes a new wife, and every night he spends the night with her, and every morning he decapitates her. And it's such a wound, such a strong trauma to heal, until at some point the daughter of the vizier who is a kind of a prime minister in that society. The daughter of the vizier herself says, "Father, we have to stop this. This massacre is just madness. Let me offer to be the wife of Shahriyar." So the vizier, of course, says, "Oh, my daughter, no, 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 no." But she makes it happen, and she gets married with Shahriyar. And during the night, she starts to tell stories. And she tells them in such an amazing way, with so much charisma, with a bit of humor here, with a bit of goosebumps there, with, of course, a lot of philosophy behind all of them, that after 1001 nights, Shahriyar is healed. And he can move on, and they finally move out of that bedroom. Imagine living in a bedroom for all that. And then he becomes a great leader for his people, and she becomes her right hand, because he has grown out of it. He has grown out of his trauma, and he doesn't hate women anymore. And this is why I'm so geeky about not calling them the Arabian Nights, because you can see that it's not a tale that comes from the Arabian culture. It comes from the Indo-Persian culture. This is why you see this position of the woman as a healing icon, the woman who is powerful enough, who has a strong voice enough to be able to help her partner, her community, her country, her culture. And yeah, reading this as a small girl, of course, it's been fascinating, because you have this whole scenery of the fabulous Indo-Persian space, but also because there was a light bulb there in my head. There's power in stories. And then you get so curious, and you want to know about the divine beings that are mentioned in those stories, and you want to know about Damascus and Baghdad and those sacred spaces. And you know, one thing leads to another, and you end up reading 1,000 books of mythology and traveling all over the world and hearing the stories of people from everywhere.
Wow, thank you, Christina. Yeah, that's really beautiful. I mean, one of the things that come to mind listening to you is the importance really of telling the real stories. I feel like the Disney version is the Disney version, but to really have the depth of those stories that had carried a great deal more complexity and wisdom behind them, and enough to be able to heal such trauma, enough to be able to heal, you know, a trauma that was creating havoc within the kingdoms, because this is a leader. This is a leader who needs to be leading his people. And instead, he was so traumatized that he was destroying his country and destroying the women. And to be able to call back a culture wherein the stories are allowed to have that kind of complexity and depth, that is, I feel like that is so needed right now, more than ever before, because I feel like a lot of the stories have become predictable and easy. It's almost like when people say, well, you know, I used to get really upset when people would say, well, if you're on the right path, it should be easy. You know, and if it's not easy, if it doesn't come easy, then you're not on the right path. And I feel like, well, it doesn't mean that it has to be difficult, but I feel like that's just a misunderstanding or a misinterpretation of the depth and complexity of life that is interconnected with everything. And that when we choose the so-called right path, or the path of soul, or the path of heart, that there are, some things may come easily, but there are other places where we are asked to expand, and that's always difficult. There are places where our hearts or our souls or our minds are closed that we are asked to open, and they usually come with a struggle of some sort. You know, sometimes, no, they can happen gracefully, but not always. And to be able to support children and people with that kind of resilience, I feel is so important and part of the magic of storytelling, and you know, and to bring that back there. I don't know, it just came to me, but.
Yes, you're being so wise as always, Yukiko. I so much agree with you. I've heard this also, if the door doesn't open, it's not your door. I do not agree. I think the best things in life come with a lot of effort and with a lot of searching and seeking and doubting yourself and asking yourself, am I on the right path? Why am I doing this? And then you stay there and you persevere. And at some point, again, in hindsight, you realize that everything in your life led you to doing that. But it wasn't easy. It was never easy. There was a lot of failure. There was a lot of self-doubting. Who doesn't have that? And even if you look so gracious in everything you do, you look like everything falls into place wonderfully on your path, actually, there's a lot of effort behind. And there's a lot of, again, that guilt, that shame, that feeling that you cannot do it, that you're not the right person in the right time. And all the stories that we tell have that character arc. And I like to talk about it because it's so simple to understand. And you know, yeah, like every passionate, like any stories aficionado, let's say, and passionate about mythology and religions. Of course, I love Joseph Campbell and the work he did, because what he did was to make it all feel so simple. All the stories of the world, all the movies of the world, all the books of the world have the same character arc, the journey of the hero or the heroine. And in that character arc, there is pain, there is suffering, there's a moment of death of the soul, there's a moment in that cave where you fear to enter, but you need to enter because this is where the treasure you seek lies. So you need to enter that cave, and you might die in that cave, but then you rise again and you develop your character arc. So everything that is worthwhile, everything that is a treasure, needs to have that character arc. And sometimes it's just one throughout your whole day, whole life, but most of the times it's character arcs into character arcs, cycle, cycle, cycle. So we always have that moment of self-doubt. And all the good stories show that. And it's true that the simple versions of the stories that we have, that we grew up with, that we have been socialized in, maybe lack the whole depth of the folklore that was behind, of the religion that stood behind that tale. But it does present the character arc. And I think this is very powerful because we need to normalize this. It's normal to feel like you cannot do it sometimes. And then you find the right resources, you find the right people, like the hero would find the magic weapons or the aides or the sage who will guide him or her. And then with that help, you go and you kill the dragon, right? Which can be your doubt or your feeling that you're not good enough.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, Irina asks a very interesting thing. She says, do you have in mind a heart, do you have in your mind and heart a reverse story of Scheherazade about the masculine serving the feminine to heal?
That's a good one. We need to start looking into these stories.
I was just thinking about that. Those of you who's watching, you know, if you have a story that you can think about in this vein, just type it in.
I might have one. I might have one.
Okay.
So, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, in Mahabharata, we have the story of this princess who is vowed by her father to marry a hero who would manage a crazy feat. So he needs to pull his bow and throw his arrow into a ring to get right into the eye of a fish that is moving. So it's a crazy feat that nobody can fulfill, of course. And then, because this is how stories go, this prince Arjuna comes in and he does it. I don't remember, you had to be blindfolded. It was crazy. So the woman was there thinking, yeah, so this is just for me to stay a spinster of all my life. This is just impossible. And then Arjuna comes in and he does it. But what happens is that when Arjuna takes the princess home to his brothers and mother, because he was still living with his mother, this says a lot, and he had three other brothers, and his mother, before he enters the house, says, whatever you brought in must be shared equally between all of you. You know the story, right, Yuki? Mm-hmm. So it must be shared equally. So then what does this mean? That the wife will become the wife of all of them. Which, of course, can sound wonderful, like she would have her own personal harem, but it's actually not like this. She will be the slave of each of them in a row, and they will have, okay, day one starts year one, Arjuna will have her, and then year two, the next brother will have her, and then year three. So she wasn't happy with this arrangement, let's call it very clearly as it is. And especially because each of them had their own issues. So then she had to kind of mold herself to build a good companionship for each of them. Arjuna was super vain, and then another one was very aggressive, whatever. But then the third husband, in her third year of being a married woman, the third husband heals her wounds. So everything that the other brothers made her feel, you know, like all the, you're not good enough, all the you should be more like this or more like that, he would heal all of that just because he was truly in love with her. So of all the brothers, this one was just smitten with the princess. And he just wanted to be there by her side. And he just wanted to make a family. So that year, because of course the cycles continued, so you finish the brothers and then you start again, Arjuna again, year five, whatever. So in all those cycles, whenever she got to that brother, she knew it would be the year of her healing time. So she would understand that she needs to go through all of that. She needs to learn. It's like a spiral. She goes back to the same brother, but she's a bit better. Because in that specific year, with that specific brother, I don't remember the names, you know, it's just too much.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, but I can't remember them either. Yeah.
I can't remember, but the next time we hear each other, I'll tell you what's the name of that specific brother who loved her so much that he didn't want anything from her. He just wanted her to be there so he could be there for her. So every time in this spiral of development, she would actually grow a bit wiser, a bit kinder every time, because she would have this chance to have her 1 year with this one brother. So you see, there is the positive masculine also in this myth. There's always the power of love, the power of wisdom, the power of patience, because he waited for her. From the beginning, he wanted her. When Arjuna brought her home, he was just fascinated. But he waited in a kind and patient way to just be her partner on the road.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Because, yeah, I do remember that story. And I remember not reading it that way, going, gosh, this, you know, patriarchal society. I was just really mad and upset, but that's really true. If you look at it as a story of these cycles that we have to go, you know, that we all go through, the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the ages, the cycle of injustices sometimes that we cycle through, and to within that to start to find our footing and our strength, and to really start to build that, you know, with the help in this instance from the masculine source, the one that says, I will hold and protect you and see you as you are. And that's the most healing thing, isn't it? To be seen and loved. Mm-hmm. And Oh, did this third brother ever free her from the other brothers, though?
No,
it
doesn't go like that. So
if
they
there's
ended
something
up,
that happens.
Yeah, the war of, and they survived. They survived the war together as a family. So it's Mahabharata is actually the war of these two families for the throne, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, right? And
yeah.
Thousands of people die, and but they do survive, and they get out on the other side of the tunnel, let's say, wiser together, kinder together. So she doesn't need to be saved anymore. She finds her place and she finds her respect, and or this is what we like to believe.
Right, that as the queen, because
mm-hmm.
she becomes the queen. But it's yeah, it's a very, it is kind of written in the patriarchal mold of the Indo-European culture of India, and it's also seen as this internal battle. A lot of people see the Mahabharata as this amazing internal battle that we have within. And within the Mahabharata is the
Gita,
name
the Bhagavad
Gita. Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, which is it's again this poem of the battle, right at the eve of battle. And Arjuna loses faith. And
mm-hmm.
Krishna, his chariot driver, who's the god.
Yeah,
it's this whole conversation about losing faith, but there's no woman involved there. It's God and man, and what happens in that story, which is part of the story of some of the patriarchal, you know, sky god kind of religions that came in, is that this is not real.
Mm.
So part of what is said in the Gita is that this is all an illusion. So don't get
mm-hmm.
caught up in this. If you were born a warrior, do your duty. And maybe we need to rewrite this whole thing, Christina. Maybe it's time to come up with some, I really feel, some new mythologies that may have remained from like the really old times, but to retool them in a way that brings about healing for both, you know, the sisters and the brothers, and in this new world that we are so desperately trying to birth, and others are desperately trying to not birth. You know, there's a huge, huge Mahabharata going on, you know, at this time as well. So.
Yes, I'm absolutely with you. Let's rewrite them. Actually, I think we're very lucky we live in this era, because talking about illusions, I remember there is this, do you know Chitra Divakaruni? Divakaruni, I hope I pronounce her name correct, which is this wonderful writer who takes all the ancient myths of India and rewrites them from the perspective of the woman. So then you have the Forest of Enchantment, the whole Ramayana and Sita story written from the perspective of Sita. And then you would have, you called it an illusion, right? When Krishna tries to put honor back into Arjuna and says, everything is an illusion, just do your duty. And she wrote this book, The Palace of Illusions, which tells this story. And then I think we have an entire generation of new writers, a lot of them women, which of course make a difference, that rewrite the big wounded, traumatic myths of humanity
mm-hmm.
from the perspective of the woman and put back the wisdom, maybe the kindness, maybe the care, maybe the connection with nature, maybe the, you know, the care for the babies, like Madeline Miller with Circe and the Song of Achilles,
right.
Or Pat Burker with The Silence of the Girls and the Women of Troy. So there's a whole generation of new writers feeding from those, drinking from those old streams, old mythological streams, but with a different spin on them. And I think it's so necessary to search for those narratives too, and to tell a story that is less filled with shame and with hatred and with a bit of exasperation and you know, aggression towards the patriarchy, but see, yeah, bring, put more voice, strengthen the voice,
yeah,
of these versions.
Yeah. And really, I feel like it's also, you know, we are all invited to create and write a different kind of story. I mean, as we're speaking, like, I think about all the LGBTQ community, these kids that are coming through who are saying, I am not this gender, I'm gender neutral. I am mm-hmm. all of these things that are happening. I really feel like we need to have more stories that can really represent where we seem to be headed. And I'm sure there'll be more and more coming out from the collective consciousness. But I would love to also see you, Christina, you know, as you research stories to start to write them, you know, from the way that you are experiencing the world. That would be really wonderful. I hope you do that.
I hope we all do that. We definitely need a diversity of voices with everything that diversity means.
Because if it's about healing, then it's also, I feel, our collective creative endeavor to write new stories. And I want to share with, because it's time for us to start to wrap this up, but I want to share, this is an Instagram account that Christina set up, Avalon for Children. So go take a look. And there are recordings. Are there recordings there accessible to Christina of different stories that are told by you and other people?
Yes, it's a collection of myths told by me, told by you, told by different priestesses from around the world, by different friends and companions on this path that are experts in, or at least very passionate about their lands, mythologies, and tales. There are tips of storytelling and how to make storytelling easy and how to just make it part of our lives, because we need more people to want and to be willing and able to say, I have a story for you.
Yeah.
When we open up our hearts and we learn from each other.
That's absolutely that. Yes. And it's, yep. I really think we need to do some retooling and retelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, thank you so much for today, Christina, and thank you everybody for listening in. I also wanted to tell you about some of the ways in which I am bringing some of the priestesses that we're collaborating and creating this virtual moon temple, an online moon temple called the Moon Body Temple. And it's you can find us on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and just type in Moon Body Temple, it'll come up. It's a free group that you can join. And Christina will be conducting, I think it's the full moon, right? The full moon ceremony on September 10th, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it'll be the from noon Eastern time in the United States. So it would be European time, 6 p.m. European time on September 10th. And I hope you can join us. There is a beautiful new moon ceremony that's coming up by our sound healer priestess, Elsa Field, who will be doing a beautiful sound bath for the new moon that's coming up at the end of this week. I think she's going to be doing that on the 26th of August. But go to the Facebook site, Moon Body Temple, and become a member. It's free, and you'll get all the information about all these ceremonies that we're doing. And So thank you so very much. I'm really sorry. We're going to take some questions. But are there any questions for any of you still with us right now that you would like to ask Christina or myself? Please post and we can take a look.
And while people are posting their questions, I want to thank you, Yukiko, for opening this space, for talking about stories and the healing power of stories. I think it's so necessary. And it's amazing the work you do. And I'm so proud to be your companion and your friend on this path. Looking forward to seeing everyone on the 10th of September. There will be storytelling. We will work with another Yoruba goddess, Yemanja. And it will be lovely. So looking forward to having everyone there.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Simina and Irina and Angie. And Angie wants you to do, please supply a list. So yes, we'll post it somewhere. Let me think. I will post it on the Facebook. In Facebook. And I'll see if I can I'll get the names of the different authors who are rewriting the myths and stories from a feminine or more a woman-centric point of view. And I'll get that list from Christina, and I'll post it up on my Facebook page as well as, I think that's something that I would really love to put on my website in the resource area. So I will be doing that. And yeah, for my website, it's mygoddesspath.com. So we will be doing this because I feel like it's really, really important that we gather the resources so that people can really go and look for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be really wonderful at some point if we could create like a hub where people can bring stories and put them in there, you know?
Yes, maybe. I love this idea. Let's see how we can weave it together. Let's talk about this when we meet in October.
Yes. That's right. Yes, because Christine and I are going to Crete.
To the convocation of the priestesses.
Yeah, yes. So that's going to be great. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I will end the broadcast right now. And thank you so much again for participating. And Christina, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. And if you would like to hear the replay or if you want to tell your friends about it, you can go to any place where you get a podcast, Goddess and Energy Coming Alive. That's Goddess and Energy Coming Alive. And this will be the newest episode, Find Your Life Purpose Through Story. Okay, and that will be going up starting tomorrow. So thank you again, and have a wonderful rest of your day or rest of the evening, or have a really wonderful dreams.
Thank you so much, Yukiko. Take care.
Yes, thank you. Good night.